It's about time we stop, those of us who support, as most of us do, Israel in this body, for apologizing for our support for Israel. There's no apology to be made. None. It is the best $3 billion investment we make. Were there not an Israel, the United States of America would have to invent an Israel to protect her interest in the region. The United States would have to go out and invent an Israel.
The second part is, people should understand by now, this should be crystal clear, that Israel is the single greatest strength America has in the Middle East. I always say to my friends when I say those things to you, I say, imagine our circumstance in the world were there no Israel. How many battleships would there be? How many troops would be stationed? You know, I used to say early on when I was a kid, I'd say when I was a young senator, I'd say, if I were a Jew, I'd be a Zionist. I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist.
Progress occurs in the Middle East when everyone knows there's simply no space between the United States and Israel. There is no space between the United States and Israel when it comes to Israel's security. There is only one nation in the world that has unequivocally, without hesitation, and consistently confronted the efforts to delegitimize Israel. At every point in our administration, at every juncture, we've stood up on the legitimacy, on behalf of the legitimacy of the state of Israel.
The security of Israel and the United States is inextricably tied. And we will never, ever, ever abandon Israel out of our own self-interest.
I also emphasize what I've said throughout this conflict. The United States fully supports Israel's right to defend itself against indiscriminate rocket attacks from Hamas and other Gaza-based terrorist groups that have taken the lives of innocent civilians in Israel.
Alright guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 201, I believe. And word is, from the river to the sea, we are one of the best podcasts in that region. We're here with Deborah and our returning champion guest, Odd Man Out. What's going on, dude?
Hey man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to get back into it. Lots of stuff's going on in the world, and it is, Deborah, can you ever remember it being as crazy as it is right now?
No. Even like during, well, Vietnam War, but no, it's never been this crazy.
Yeah, what would have been like the crazy time of like the past generation would have been like the late 60s during the Democratic convention. Is that in like 68 or 69? Do you remember that? When they had the Democratic convention in Chicago. Do you know about that one, Odd Man?
I know a little bit.
Yeah, that was what, late like 68 or something 68. Like that.
68.
Yeah, it's wild. So Odd Man, check this out. My wife was down in the Bay Area last week or the week before visiting Deborah. And her friend still lives in San Francisco. So she goes over and stays the night at her friend's house, like midweek or late. She stayed at her friend's house, then her friend drove her to the airport on Thursday. And they went down to this seafood restaurant in what's typically kind of a seedy neighborhood, the neighborhood that my wife used to live in when I first met her. And my wife comes back and she goes, I couldn't believe how clean it was, how much they've really cleaned up the city. And then I was like, wow, that's wild. I would not have expected that. And then I remembered that Xi Jinping was coming to town.
Oh.
So she saw the artificially clean San Francisco.
Oh my God.
Deborah, where did they put all the bums?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
It's like, it's the APEC thing. And I think today was the last day.
I know they got the Bay Bridge shut down.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. They parked a bunch of people. Odd man. They shut down the Bay Bridge, which goes from Oakland to San Francisco today.
Huge commuter.
Wow.
It's like the new version of the BLM, the socialist groups. I was just listening to No Agenda. They were talking about it. They drove onto the bridge, stopped, and then threw their keys off the bridge.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's going to like cause a bunch of trouble for them later on. It's going to be you ever try to get your car? I've had to get a motorcycle out of impound in San Francisco before. Yeah. And I had the keys, I hadn't been arrested before.
What a nightmare. For everybody. Yeah.
For everybody.
Yeah. So I don't know. Where do you think all the homeless went, Deborah?
I have no idea. I really don't.
Yeah, maybe they put them on the bus to LA. I don't know. Maybe they gave them one-way plane tickets to any place of their choosing. That's thousands and thousands of people that they got out of there. Doesn't it seem kind of strange that they'll do it for a Chinese dictator, but they won't do it for,
Dreamforce,
the average citizen in the city?
I'll be interested to find, if we actually find out what they actually did with them.
Yeah. Or how soon they'll come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy. Is Joe Biden there?
I don't think so.
No, but he met with Gavin Newsom, right?
I have not been following up on news lately.
This is going to give. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's just too upsetting.
I was just going to say this will probably give Newsom some gravitas. He gets to meet with this world leader because I think he's going to run for president. I don't know. I hear that. I haven't been keeping up with even that, but I hear ramblings about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I listen to Charlie Robinson a lot, and he just did a whole episode on Gavin Newsom.
Okay.
And he's saying, I kind of agree with what he's saying. He plays the long game. He gets in a position of power, and he stays there for a long time. I'm thinking 2028 will be his turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's a bad guy.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
I got just on like a human level, he's a terrible person. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, odd man, in like 2012 in Marin County, which is where Deborah lives, which is right over the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco. It's like a wealthier area, wealthy community. And I was at this big like social AA meeting that they have every Thursday night in this town called Mill Valley, where they give out chips and like for like periods of sobriety, and it's like a big social one. There's like a couple hundred people there. And they give out chips for time of sobriety. And then they have like a featured speaker, like, talk for the rest of the meeting, like a longer personal share. And one time I went there when I was about 6 months sober, and this attractive cougar type woman probably in her late 30s, was up there talking. And about 10 minutes into, I know I'm based on the traditions of AA, I'm probably not supposed to be sharing this, but about 10 minutes into her share, everyone in the crowd realizes that she is Gavin Newsom's mistress, his best Wow. friend's ex-wife, the one he was sleeping with, his best friend's wife. And she did not hide the fact that that's who she was. And she said, like, every night that there was some sort of event in San Francisco that they would go to, they were at like a dinner or an event or a fundraising thing every night, and they would start drinking, you know, midday, and were just loaded on cocaine and alcohol every single day.
Not surprising.
Yeah. And then yeah, so I mean, he's a bad guy. And then they I think they tried to pay her off. They sent her off to rehab and tried to like pay her off. So yeah, but I think I think this year is not, this election cycle is not the one for him, but I don't I know that we will continue to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And you know, like, they're keeping these people. Like, I'm thinking of, on the other side, Nikki Haley. I don't think she's going to win this time around, but I feel like they're kind of pushing her to eventually run, maybe next time.
Which, yeah, she's got the backing, it seems, at this point from the party.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's if anything, I mean, nobody likes her in the public. But if anything, it's these people are just these advertisements or these debates now are just advertisements. These people, it's almost like a job interview. These people are just pitching themselves to Raytheon and Israel and saying, we're open for business. You know, like,
that's a great way to put it. Yeah, absolutely.
I think Vivek's like really trying to be the VP, but I think everyone else is just like, yeah, I'm for sale.
Yeah.
What's Chris Christie pulling at?
Oh yeah.
Like four.
Yeah, I doubt
4%.
No, that's more than I would suspect.
I watched go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I was telling my wife a couple days ago that I saw a clip and Chris Christie was at some event. It looked like it was probably a speaking engagement for him, and people were booing him.
Oh yeah.
Like 90% of the audience, it sounded like, and he just stood there like with a weird, awkward smile. He didn't know really how to handle it. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. His, Donald Duck burn that he came up with will go down in political history as one of the biggest misses of all time.
Oh, terrible.
I missed it. Tell me.
You know how Trump hasn't been coming to any of these debates, Deborah?
Right.
He said something like, you're not willing to come and face the people with the questions. We're not going to call you Donald Trump. We're going to call you Donald Duck. And that sound of silence that you just heard after I said that was not as long as the one that I think happened in real life. Yeah. But it's funny. They ISO'd it on OBDM, so they play it all the time on OBDM now.
Did you catch in this last debate Nikki Haley, and forgive me, I can't remember the name of the candidate.
Vivek?
With the Indian name?
Yeah, Vivek Ramaswamy.
Thank you. He said something about Nikki Haley's daughter being on TikTok.
Yeah.
And her response was, keep my daughter out of your voice.
Yeah, she screwed it up. I was really, it would have been funny if she said, keep my daughter out of your mouth.
Yeah.
She tried to come up, she tried to do the Will Smith retort.
Yes.
And then she called it under her breath, she called him a scum.
Yes. No, it wasn't under her breath. She said it.
Yeah. I think there's some sort of weird Indian dynamic that we don't understand that's going on between them. I think they're from like some sort of different cast or something like that. Because she's Indian.
That's right.
I didn't realize that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think there's something deeper going on between them because of that.
Uh-huh.
I saw a great meme just a couple hours ago about her, because she came out and I guess maybe at the debate and said that as a president, she would, I guess, make it to where you couldn't comment online without, I guess, registering your real name, something like that.
Yeah, she's pushing for verification.
Yeah. And it said, it had a little clip. It said, I will make sure everyone knows everyone's name. And then at the bottom, it said, but Nikki's not your real name. Because I think her real name is some Indian name, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. Fun times. Yeah. But yeah, I can't believe what's going on with like, it reminds me of that what's going on right now. You know, that meme with like James Franco where he's sitting there in the gallows about to get hung and he's looking at the other person saying first time.
Oh yeah.
You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It reminds me of I wish I had a meme maker. I would make one that shows like me, woke social justice warriors getting called anti-Semitic, and then me as the James Franco part of the meme saying, oh, it's your first time? Because I've been getting called anti-Semitic since I was 15 years old. And it's insane what's going on in the world right now, what's being pushed socially through, especially TikTok. Deborah's other daughter is a big TikToker, and she's a little bit more on the woke side than me and Deborah's other daughter. But yeah, she has gone full pro-Palestine, and it's crazy what's going on and what's being accepted in society right now. What have you been noticing?
Yeah. I mean, it still surprises me that people are speaking so honestly, or I guess it depends on who you ask, but people are saying things, you know, about Israel that they never would have said a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago on social media. And I can't believe that people aren't being just deleted.
Yeah,
it strikes me as weird. Why are they putting up with it now when you couldn't say anything, you know, literally just a few years ago or even maybe a year ago?
Yeah.
So it's almost like it's being allowed to happen for a reason. Maybe so they can say, well, this is the evidence that people are anti-Semitic, because I'm seeing people called that just for simple disagreements about the, you know, the policies and stuff. So it's like,
but it's lost all its, it seems as though it's lost all its power, that word.
It really is. I think, you know, just like they did with racism, it's the same thing. You know, I noticed the Republicans, they do the exact same thing as they complain about with the liberals, you know, using the race card. When it comes to Israel, it's the same exact thing, you know. I mean, not much different at all. You can't have any disagreement, or you hate these people. You hate Israel. You hate, you know, it's like, wait, back up. First of all, we're talking about a government, you know, so don't try to act like we're talking about a blanket, you know, just a people, you know. It's just so frustrating. It's, you know, it's in the same thing with, you know, with the Palestinians and Hamas, you know. It's like they're blurring that line where everybody is Hamas, you know, all Palestinians are Hamas, basically. You know, I think we talked about it before, but like, it's that whole deal with you're either for us or against us, like George Bush said. And it's like, wait a minute, no, the situation is much, much more complicated than that. And the war on terror was much more complicated than that as well. But they want to keep it simple so they can push us in one corner or the other.
Yeah, it's and, you know, it's also coming around the other way, too, when I see all this pro-Palestine support from, and all the groups that are doing it are, that are pushing it, are all the exact same groups that were behind BLM. Mm-hmm. All these like neo-Marxist socialist, industrial workers of the world, all of these groups. And you said, you know, you talked to me through DMs and you said that you hadn't been listening to No Agenda because you didn't want to be influenced either way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've kind of, you know, like certain shows, I don't want to, I'm like, I don't want to hear them say something that I know I'm going to disagree with vehemently and, not, you know what I mean? Like, I know that we can't all agree, but that's another reason I haven't listened.
I think, you know, they've played it pretty fair. I mean, John C. Dvorak is a total boomer in his opinion on it. And Adam Curry said some really strange things, like he didn't realize until recently that the most professors in like the higher in higher education were, you know, liberal Jews. And he said he didn't realize that, which is very, very strange to me. But they've been doing a good job on at least following the money for all these different support groups and where it's been coming from. So yeah, they broke down. They've been playing all these clips of these people speaking at these massive protests. And yeah, it's all commie stuff. And it's wild.
Well, you know, that sounds just like your typical, like, I feel like the elite, like with the Tea Party, I feel like that probably started out as like small time people who were just fed up with their government. And then they had to get Sarah Palin and John McCain and all these, you know, like these mainstreamers involved. And it totally just diluted the whole thing. And then it got to where it was like, it was no longer about smaller government and holding your people accountable. It went to just a left right thing, you know? And I feel like any of these movements, they probably already see them coming and they try to get in there and hijack them. Now that might not be the case with this. It could have been, you know, from the start, a left-leaning Soros thing. But I feel like just from what I can tell, it seems like that's always the case because that's how the CIA operates, you know?
Yeah.
They go in these foreign countries and they infiltrate these groups. And if there's a problem, then they stir the problem up, you know? And I went over like, I think it was on my third show, but it was this booklet that blew my mind. It was like the CIA, I think it was called the Guerrilla Warfare Manual or something like that. I think it was Psychological Guerrilla Warfare Manual, actually, it was the entire title. And it talked about how they would go in, I think they wrote it during this whole Sandinista thing in the 80s, and they talked how they would go in and infiltrate the groups. They would make picket signs that say controversial things that get people upset. Huh. And they even talked about how sometimes you would have to create a martyr for the cause to really rally the people. So they know exactly how to do this. So it makes me wonder, anytime on either side, when there's just like the January 6th thing, I totally believe that was, we'll probably never know for sure, but I really believe that probably the CIA had a hand in that as well, because they want chaos and division, because when the people, you know, it sounds simple, but when the people are weak, they are strong, you know? And so I think it's one of those universal truths.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you just brought up the Tea Party, and when the Tea Party was gaining steam, Occupy was going on at the same time. And there was a real possibility of like those two groups looking at each other and being like, yeah, we're not the 1%. We're getting screwed here. Yeah. And right then is when all the race division started.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And yeah. So it went from class to race at that point.
You know, I think another thing that kind of I find interesting is now that whole Osama bin Laden paper is going around.
Yeah, because I didn't know anything about it. And TikTok, again, they've been maybe listening to today's No Agenda. They talked about it and they played all these TikToks where it's like that news thing where, you know, where they show all the local news saying the same exact thing.
Yeah.
It was like that. They showed all these different TikToks where they're saying the same thing about that. Same exact wording and everything like that. I hadn't heard anything about it, but Deborah's TikTok daughter told me about it last night at dinner.
What are the Osama bin Laden papers?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say I never read it. I think I had heard of it, but I never looked into it. And so I guess the Guardian had put it out. I don't know how long it had been out, but then they detracted it. And it was just basically his manifesto, I guess you would say, of why he was against the U.S. government. And I don't think that it said anything about 9/11, if I remember correctly. I listened to most of it today on audio because I got one of those apps. But he was really, I mean, you know, I hate to say it, but a lot of the things he said were spot on, you know, about how greedy America's become, and just all the things that they talked about that the U.S. and Israel have been doing militarily and financially in the Middle East for so very long. And it's like, you know, how do you just, I mean, this is just facts. Now, some of the things he said about Islam and different things like that, I don't agree with. But one of the things that hit me that made me think, okay, maybe this is legit and maybe it's just one of those things that got leaked out and went viral. He's talking about usury as one of the worst problems with the West and Israel. And I think that, you know, that's a no-no. You do not talk about that because we all have to be debt slaves for all of them to stay, you know, in control. And I can't help but think that that was one of the big reasons why they're trying to shut that down, because I've seen like all the typical people like Glenn Beck and Hannity and Ingram and all these people, you know, talking about how can these young people read the TikTok? I mean, I read the Osama bin Laden's paper on TikTok or hear it on TikTok and agree with it or whatever. You know, kind of blanket statements like that. And I'm like, well, I got to check it out. So I did. And I ended up thinking, well, you know, a lot of the things he said are hard to deny.
Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is go back to 2008 and listen to Ron Paul tell Giuliani about blowback. Is it pretty much just that in a nutshell?
It pretty much is. Yeah. I mean, he gets pretty specific on, you know, what they did in Lebanon, you know, what they've done financially, you know, various massacres and different things like that on Palestinians and other people, and just what they've done to, you know, to Muslims as a whole in the Middle East. And, you know, I look back and I'm like, well, you know, we've been overthrowing governments there since at least the 50s, 1953, Operation Ajax. I think it was the CIA and the British MI5 or MI6 worked together to overthrow the government over there in Iran. And, you know, so we've been.
Was that, that's Mossadegh, right?
I think so. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's the one that John Perkins talks about extensively in Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Okay. Okay. I've never read that book. I've always wanted to, but I've just never got around to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you read it now, I think it would provide some value to you, but you would just be like, what's the controversy here? Isn't this known to everybody? You know, it's just, you know, it's 101. It's conspiracy 101, but it's a good book to read. Mm-hmm. That guy went full climate retard now.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Yeah. He decided that the only way he could make up for a lifetime of destroying countries and maybe not going down south after he dies is that he has to like help people in the rainforest or something like that. So
I've noticed, I've said this probably on other podcasts, but you know, there's books that I've read where they've got like 90% of things right, really exposed things, and then the last chapter or two they make the whole play for we need to just have a world government.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you kidding me? After everything you just said about all these power elites, you think that would work? Because that is, you're consolidating power. And, you know, obviously it would be such a powerful entity at that point that you could not do anything against, you know, against them when they were doing bad things to you.
Yeah. So many of those guys that are in the generation before us that were writing just amazing conspiracy texts, Dave McGowan included, Douglas Valentine, all those guys. I mean, it's weird because they're from the time when, you know, the right wing had some semblance of power and was bad, and they're all libtards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, me so and Jack.
Like, they'll make great points. Like Douglas Valentine just wrote like his memoirs, which is about him going to Vietnam and like finding up all this stuff about what's the operation in Vietnam where they the Gladio of Vietnam, oh, Phoenix.
Oh, okay. Phoenix and, okay, yeah.
But then like the underlying message of the whole book is that about how bad Trump is. I mean, it's crazy.
It is. It's weird because I've said this before, but there's something psychologically that Trump did to both the left and the right, you know, mm-hmm. like it was a certain age group, especially like guys a little bit older than me, you know, they're on the right. Trump became their God, you know, and then on the other side, he became the most evil man that's ever lived, you know, Hitler number two, which every, yeah. you know, Republican yeah. president's called Hitler, but it's just, and that gave him so much power to twist people either way, but it's just weird to me that, like you said, Douglas Valentine exposed the CIA and Operation Phoenix and all that. But I've noticed that he's obsessed or kind of obsessed with Trump. And I'm like, dude, I mean, just look back at how,
you know. It's so crazy to know all that stuff about the CIA and then to be like, oh, this is like an organic thing that's happening, or the CIA didn't have any involvement in everything that happened over the last 6 or 7 years, you know?
Right, right. I mean, you know, and with the Clintons and their ties to all things horrible, you know, and Obama to a degree, although I've never thought that Obama, I kind of thought that he got a little bit too much flack. I mean, I'm no fan, don't get me wrong, but I felt like he almost become kind of the whipping post for the right. And he wasn't the brains behind that. You know, you look at his administration. I think we talked about this last time, but his administration were all Ashkenazi Jews. But there was that email that got leaked right after he got elected, or maybe right before.
Yeah, from Citibank.
Citibank. So Citibank, you know, basically chose his administration. So, you know, people say now, well, Obama's in charge of the Biden administration. I'm like, he was not. I mean, he was a smart guy, but he wasn't that smart.
Yeah, maybe the people that were in charge of Obama are in charge of the Biden administration because they're always in charge. Yeah, Deborah,
exactly.
It's been so. I don't know who leaked it, what the veracity is of it, but there is a email that was sent out after Obama got elected from Citibank saying these are our picks for your cabinet, and they all ended up there.
On the cabinet.
Yeah. I don't know if it was strong suggestions from them or like more authoritarian way of saying it, but yeah, they all ended up there. So
funny thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm really having a hard time figuring out what the hell's going on. And I think that's the whole op is just being confused all the time. And this, what's going on now wasn't in my, you know, predictions for 2023.
Yeah, definitely.
You had two great episodes with one of my favorite podcasters, Pete Quinones, over the past couple weeks. And I listened to the second one today. He doesn't pull punches. He goes hard in the paint. And his theory is that the reason that Israel hasn't wiped Palestine off the map yet, or is because they need that ever looming, Israel needs that ever looming threat to validate the existence of what they do. And maybe that's what's happening with all this counter protesting that's going on right now. Because people are whipped up, young people are whipped up into a frenzy. You look at all these polls of the ages of people and their support for Israel. Mm-hmm. And Deborah, your boomer generation is like 80-85%. I saw it in real life at church, hanging out with my godparents and some of the other older people. And and we talked about, you know, Christian Zionism and all that stuff. And that's probably that age group. And then, like, as it goes down, you know, Gen X, like, it goes down 20%, like, every time. Then you get to the Zoomers, and it's like, you know, 20% support.
Well, we were all raised right after the Holocaust. So, you know, that I'm sure influences.
Yeah.
But I never considered Israel to be at fault for any of the stuff going on in the Middle East until I started looking into it just recently because of, now, you know,
what have you heard, and from, if you, I'm not trying to put you on the spot for like what deep research you've done or anything, but if I know it's probably some media that you've consumed, do you remember who it might have been from?
Well, I went, you know, and bookmarked a bunch of stuff off of the internet. But I have to say that the biggest timeline that I looked at was from Israel, Mission of Israel to UN in Geneva. That was the name of the website. And, you know, it just starting, let's see, in 1700 BCE. Okay, so way, way, way back. It's all about what was done to the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
In their pursuit of, you know, religious freedom or whatever, you know, a place to call home, whatever. Even, you know, up through current day where it's, you know, they say that, you know, such an attack happened and, you know, 17,000 Palestinians lost their lives and 7 Israelis lost their lives, that kind of stuff. It didn't come up that way.
It didn't,
you know,
come
in,
up
in
that,
this,
oh, in that,
in this time, in all these timelines that I compiled together, it, you know, the Israelis came out smelling like a rose, you know.
But then you cross-referenced it with some non,
yeah,
Israeli sources, and you found out that there might have been a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff that people, you know, it's kind of annoying because everybody's an expert now, and I'm guilty of it too. But, you know, the USS Liberty attack, did you come across that?
Mm-mm.
Odd Man, do you know enough about it to give Deborah a little rundown?
Well, I can't remember the exact date. I'm sure 60, I have it in my 60, notes.
67.
67, okay. So you had an American boat in the water, and there's still a few guys that are still alive that were on that boat, and they see, and it's Adam, you may know more about this than me.
It's an American spy boat.
Okay. And they see an unmarked boat coming towards them. Isn't that right? It doesn't have like a clear flag or emblem on it. From what I remember, at least, I could have got that wrong, but they think that it's probably, you know, a friendly ship or whatever, and eventually the ship starts to fire on them.
No, they were bombed by airplanes.
Oh, okay. See, I you know more about this than I do.
I think you might have been conflating it with the Libyan attack, maybe.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, Deborah, so an American spy ship was bombed by Israel in 1967 or 68, and a whole bunch of guys died, destroyed the ship, and it came out later that they have like the video recordings of like the pilots being like, or the audio recordings of the pilots saying, you know, this is an American ship, what are we doing? And they're like, and the command tells them, yeah, bomb it anyway.
And what was their reason for attacking this ship? Especially if they knew it was from the U.S.
It was, Odd Man, do you know this part of it? I can't remember.
If I remember correctly, they believed that it was, Israel thought if they sank this ship, they would blame it on I believe it was Egypt, because I believe, yes, right. Israel
that's
was
that's the Six-Day War.
Yes.
And that was versus against Egypt, right?
Right. Yeah. And so I think they thought, well, this will get the U.S. on our side with this whole, you know, deal with Egypt. And it didn't go down quite like they thought it would. But I do remember there's a good documentary on it, but it's been a while since I've seen it. And it has a bunch of the survivors on it. And yeah, it's a couple
a BBC,
of them.
A BBC documentary.
This one is, I think it's the website If Americans Knew, which is a great website to find out a lot of stuff about Palestine and Israel. But yeah, I think they put it out, and a couple of those guys were activists. One even went into the government and became like a, I don't think he was a senator, but he was a representative for a long time. And they talk about how they were shut down and at every turn. And they even called two ships, American ships, to come help them. But I guess from what I heard, when the American ships found out it was an Israeli ship, they didn't come. And it took quite a while for those guys to be rescued, and a bunch of them did die.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff like that. Let's see. What else were we going to talk about today?
Well, I was just, you know, kind of go over the way the modern state was formed. You know, I won't get into detail, but, like, you know, we've kind of been given this myth, this romantic myth of how it was a people who needed a place to live. What is it they say?
A land for a people. People with no... Yeah, I forget what the saying is.
A land for a people without a land.
Yes.
But there was like 800,000 Palestinians that lived there at the time. I think we talked about that. But yeah, you know, and it didn't happen the way we were told it happened. It happened gradually, started in the 1800s, late 1800s. Just a few people came up with the idea of Zionism. We want to get Jews back to the Holy Land, but Jews were spread out all around the world, you know, at the time. And it was kind of like, some of them were fine where they were, you know, especially the ones that were in America. But they decided we're going to do this, and they little by little started to get more funding. And really one of the big movers was that the Rothschild family decided to start buying up some land from the, there were Ottoman Turks who owned land there, but they didn't live there. So I guess they called them, what's the word for it? Absentee landowners. So they started buying up this land, and the land was, farming land that Arabs, you know, farmed on and made a living and for food and different things like that. So when they started doing that, eventually they made the Arabs stop farming, and they just brought in Jews from different places to farm, and they built these kibbutz, which are kind of like communes for them to live and whatnot. But that kind of was the start of, it was kind of like a sign of the things to come, because as these things happened more and more, the Arabs found themselves without jobs or places to work, you know, so it began this whole kind of systematized poverty, I guess, if you want to call it that, because there's just not a lot for them to do there to make money. During that meantime, there were all these organizations that were forming all around the world, Europe and United States especially, and of course the UK. And so that's really what made it powerful. You had a lot of money in these organizations. A lot of them came across as philanthropy, you know, and that's kind of like, I think so many evils come under philanthropy, because they can hide behind doing something good, you know, and they're all tax exempt too. So it's a bonus for them. But and so there's a lot of money coming in, because a lot of these top guys were, you know, lawyers and heads of industries wherever they lived and different things like that. I think one of the other big things was they were able to get a really prominent lawyer at the time, he became a Supreme Court justice. I think his first name was Louis Brandeis.
Yeah, Brandeis.
Brandeis. Yeah. And so I guess he was a real mover and shaker, and he served in the Wilson administration. He was very tight with Wilson. And he became the head of one of the Zionist organizations. I forget which one because I think it's changed names now, but he eventually became a Supreme Court justice. And it was later found out years later that he was actually a part of this group. It was a secret society called the Parushim. And it was based out of the Menorah Society in Harvard. And the Parushim means the Pharisees or to separate. And his cohort was another guy who went on to be a Supreme Court justice, Felix Frankfurter. And so even when they were both Supreme Court justices, they were working behind the scenes with this secret society, if you will. And they really were a secret society. They have oaths and different things like that. And it was Jewish authors that exposed this. So if anybody wants wants the sources, I'd be happy to send it to them. But, they basically pledged their allegiance to Zionism and in helped create this state that they were wanting to create. And also, the guy that's kind of known as the father of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, was an Austrian. I think he was like a playwright and a journalist, different things like that, a writer. And he kind of became the main face of Zionism. And I kind of, like, he was not religious. That's another thing I should probably say is most of the original Zionists were not religious. It had nothing to do with religion at first.
Yeah, and it's still to that point today. There's a large group of, I don't know how large, but there's Orthodox, super Orthodox Jews in Israel, but they're disliked and they're not Zionist and they're disliked by the rest of the country and they don't serve in the IDF. They're like, I don't want to say that they're pro-Palestine, but they're not, but it's weird. I've watched videos on YouTube of these people that go walk through these like super Orthodox areas and they have to hide their cameras and stuff like that. And they're just, they're religious fundamentalists, but there's like graffiti all over the place on the walls there of Palestinian flags and stuff like that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting that there's these different factions? And then again, there are within the Israeli government, there are Orthodox, very fundamentalist Orthodox rabbis and people that are just of that mindset who are very Zionist too. So it's kind of like there's just these different sects that you have to kind of look at. And then, like you said, there is a large percentage of people in Israel that are atheists or, agnostics or whatever. I think that's the much larger percentage, but they don't have the political power. So
how about the Likud party? That's Netanyahu's party, right? And they're kind of like the, are they ultra, they call them like ultra right? Are they really, really right wing, like bordering fascist? Or is that just what we're hearing from the media, because like Donald Trump style fascism? Or
I wouldn't say they're, okay, so if you really look at it, Zev Jabotinsky was a Polish Jew who also was a columnist, newspaper writer, and he came over after Herzl died, and he became one of the biggest leaders of Zionism, and his Zionism was called Revisionist Zionism, and his idea was, we'll take it by force, because one of the other main leaders on the other side of Zionism was David Ben-Gurion, and he was a socialist. He actually started the Labor Party there, and the majority of the original Zionists had socialist leanings or communist leanings because they came from countries that were communist and socialist,
And all the Bolsheviks were Jews.
Exactly.
Was Ben-Gurion a Bolshevik?
I don't know. That's a great question. I've never seen that connection, but,
But it would have been the timeline would have worked out right for it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would have probably worked out perfectly. Yeah.
And I mean, that's who all the neocons are. Neocons were all Bolsheviks. And then they got, once again, they got kicked out of their country.
Yeah.
Stalin kicked them all out. And then they came to America and became neocons.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so you had this, we're talking about the Likud party kind of came out of this revisionist Zionism. And I think the creator, the guy that's credited with founding it, was Menachem Begin, who I believe was the 7th PM prime minister of Israel. And the interesting thing about him was he was in the Irgun, which was a terrorist organization that had formed in Palestine when Britain had taken it over, the mandated Palestine. And when Britain took it over from the Turks, they started letting Jews in, but they weren't letting an unsurpassed amount in. They were like, okay, we've only got room for a certain amount of people because there, again, there's like nearly 800,000 Palestinians and a certain amount of Christians there as well. And so they knew that they only had a certain amount of room because there was no, you know, there was certain places where there were businesses and ways to farm and different things like that. But a lot of it was just desert, you know, so you're bringing in these people and with no way to feed them and no way to house them and different things like that. So anyway, long story short, Menachem Begin formed the Irgun. He was in a terrorist organization that began attacking the Brits because they wanted them to let all the Jews in. So they attacked a prison. They attacked an officer's club. There's several dozen attacks that they carried out and killed quite a few people, mostly Arabs and, of course, the British military, because they were occupied there, you know, because they had just taken it over and they were trying to control certain areas. So they created Likud out of that. And Likud, I think, as far as I can tell, it's kind of, it's right wing, but not exactly in the way we would say right wing with America. Like, they're right wing in the military sense, you know, mm-hmm. and in the Zionist sense, the superiority sense. But then they've emerged now since last January with another organization, another political party. It's like in English, it's the Jewish Power Party. It's like Omit Yehuda or something like that. Now, they're fundamentalist. They've got some of these crazy rabbis in there and just, you know, they hate the Arabs. They hate Americans and they are Talmudic. You know, they follow these strict Talmudic laws. They want to implement the Noahide laws, just harsh, you know, inhuman laws that no one could really follow if they were being honest. And so these two parties have merged together, and that's who is leading Israel. And, you know, that's one of the reasons ever since the last elections, they've had protests, a lot of protests, because they're trying to change some of the laws there and make it more like the Noahide and Talmudic laws. And
right. So everyone was out there protesting Netanyahu. He's probably going to get removed from power. I don't know, was there an election coming up, or do they have some way that they can like kind of get rid of their leaders, you know, midway through their, or they can just call elections kind of like what they do in Canada? I'm not sure, but I know that Netanyahu, it wasn't looking good for him, and then this happened, and you know, nothing solidifies power more than war.
Absolutely. And you know, I know you've probably seen it too. I've seen quite a few former IDF soldiers or people who either served in the military or government there, and even people like Scott Ritter, who was a UN weapons inspector and worked for different in different capacities with the American government. But a lot of people are saying that this could not have happened unless it was allowed to happen, because the security is so tight there, you know, the iron wall and everything that they do to prevent these kinds of things. And then these guys come in with makeshift hang gliders. And,
yeah. It's now, what's like a Mario Kart from the Rainbow Road, you know, you go off the road and you parachute down. That's like what they had.
And I know there's several people who were at that concert that got attacked who have said, and there's videos of it, that the IDF were shooting Israelis, just blanket shooting people, not trying to, because like there were certain buildings that they went into and stuff like that. They weren't worried about getting their people out. They just started blanketly shooting. And so that's been reported by numerous people. And we know that's happened in the past. They even have a name for that, and I'm blanking on it. But it might be called the Samson. Is that the Samson option? I'm not sure. But it's just kill everybody. Just
scorched earth.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of scorched earth, I saw on Scott Horton's Twitter, he had some video of like all these just burned out cars that were at that thing. And he was saying like, this doesn't seem like, you know, as it should be. Can I get some comments from people who like served in the military, what this looked like? And all these guys that were in Iraq One were like, that looks like what's that highway in Iraq that just got roasted by Apache helicopters, the road to, I forget what they call it. It's Timothy McVeigh was there. But yeah, he said, they all said it looks like a bunch of helicopters came in and just blew everything up.
I saw that picture, or maybe a few of those pictures, and it reminded me almost of the fires in Hawaii, just like just these lines of cars just scorched.
Yeah.
Seems strange, you know, because most of the cars were not damaged as far as bent up or you know, blown up or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very strange. Going back to Herzl, I think I was listening to one of your episodes on Those We Do Not Mention, and was Herzl's original vision for Israel, was it to be more of like a agrarian farmland society? Is that correct?
I believe so. And, you know, he was more reasonable than a lot of the other Zionists, which is, I believe, I mean, I can't prove this, but I have my suspicions that they may have taken him out, because he even suggested that, well, why don't we just convert to Christianity? He wasn't, you know, he was not religious, and that way we can move to wherever we want. In fact, his son did convert to Christianity, but Herzl, because they were offered several places over time, you know, because they were working politically through all these different means and different countries to try and get help to, you know, kind of get into Palestine.
Yeah, what were some of the other options?
They were offered Uganda by the Brits. They were offered somewhere in Texas.
oh man.
Yeah. The Texans would love that.
Right.
But Deborah, it's that old trope that the South was anti-Semitic, and it wasn't. We learned that. What's his name? The guy that raped that little girl in Georgia, where the ADL was formed, because Leo Frank, he was a Texan.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I wish I could pull it up here. So I got this book. This is the book that kind of got me started it's called Against Our Better Judgment by Allison Ware. Kind of got me started on this whole trek, if you will. I mean, I'd looked into things, but that was the first book I picked up on the subject. And it's mostly footnotes, which is great, because she puts you on your way. But she's talking about a fella who worked under Brandeis in Frankfurter. And he had written, and he was Jewish. He'd moved from, I think, Europe to America somewhere. Maybe Washington, D.C. And he said, you know, it's nothing like what they told us, Mom. Like, I've not run into any anti-Semitism here. And
where was Frank, he?
What's that?
Where was he?
I'm not sure. I wish I could remember.
Somewhere in America, though?
Yeah, and he was working under Frankfurter and Brandeis. And I heard it in the car, but I can't remember exactly. But anyway, it's in that book there, I think in the third chapter. And that got back to Frankfurter and Brandeis, and they just ruined this guy, ruined his career. I think they kicked him out of because Frankfurter had been, he was originally a professor, a very influential professor. And I'm not sure if they kicked him out of the college or something. Terrible happened to the guy, but anyway, learned his lesson
because they needed the narrative that everyone hated them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's I don't want to get sidetracked, but that's something that I've noticed It's kind of like a reoccurring thing, theme, if you will. I've got several books. Like, this is another one that I would recommend after you read the one that I just showed you. This is The Hidden History of Zionism. And the author is a Jew. It's his name is Ralph Schoenemann. And this is a super easy book to read. But he writes in a way that's just very, as a matter of fact, on the history, on up through the 80s even. And it's a great book. And he talks about how the Zionists were turning down, and I may have mentioned this before, but the Zionists were actually turning down offers for refugees to come into America and other places. You know, we've always heard it was, I think maybe Truman or LBJ, I forget which one, that was turning down refugees, Jewish refugees. According to him,
the story is that Hitler contacted whoever was in power, World War II, and asked if we wanted them, and he said no.
I think that is it's either that or that. I think this Rabbi Weiss, maybe Stephen Weiss, I believe he was the head of the Reform rabbis in America, if I'm not mistaken, and he was a very outspoken political figure. And he's got his statement in front of Congress or the Senate, and he says plainly that they do not want to let refugees into America because, and I'm paraphrasing now, but that would look bad towards their Palestinian efforts because they wanted as many people in Palestine as they could. And that's one of the things that drove Herzl crazy. He's like, why don't we take these offers? They were offered a place in the island of Cyprus. Let's see. I mentioned Uganda, a place in Argentina, different places like that. He couldn't figure out why our people are suffering and dying. And so there became a split between him and the other Zionists because they had their mindset. It's going to be Palestine or nothing. And I hate to keep mentioning books, but I've got another book here that I think is really interesting. Now, this book is not like the other books, like it's not an expose of Zionism per se, but it's called In the Shadow of the Holocaust. And it's another Jewish author, and I believe it's a female author. No, Yosef, that would be male. So anyway, he writes in there how, you know, his family, you know, survived the Holocaust and whatnot. He's got a lot of stories, but he talks in there specifically how, again, the Zionists were turning down offers to allow people into, especially children. He's got like a whole section in there about it. Children into the UK, children into the United States in different places for that very same reason. And it says also, too, that they were concerned that they would be converted to Christianity, which is pretty insane because, you know, this is your children that you want.
Yeah, you know, it's just, they want them to die.
Did they want a younger population in order to defend whatever?
Definitely.
As a defense force?
Yes. Schoenemann goes into that in The Hidden History of Zionism. He goes into that and says specifically that they, I can't remember if it was Menachem, it wouldn't have been Begin, it was probably David Ben-Gurion, one of the Zionist leaders, said that the old people, you know, paraphrasing again, they're old, they can't do anything, they can't fight, they can't farm. We want young people who are viable, who will be great for the, you know, the new state. So, you know, you see this theme in all these different books, and it's just almost like it's almost hard to understand how they could be so heartless towards their own people when supposedly the whole, you know, we're told Zionism, it was created to save Jews, you know? So I don't know. It's such a complicated history.
They needed the optics of that sacrifice to be able to make it look like it was a country was needed for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's I wonder what would have happened if like the same issues would have come up if they ended up in Uganda or Texas. I don't know if Texas might have been a little bit harder to increase their whatever land they were given, but it's do you know why Israel was so sought after? Do you think it's because of the biblical implications of it, or do you think it's because the people there would be easier to subjugate
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. Like I said, most of the original Zionists were not religious, but I think the more I try to study Judaism, especially, well, modern Judaism especially, it's so weird because it's not exactly a religion in the way, it's like kind of a cross between a religion, a faith, and just this legacy, this kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Heritage.
Mythos. Like we've got this mythos of, Adam and Eve, Moses, Noah coming all the way down. And it's almost kind of like that's only used for almost like political purposes and to move people, you know, to get them to be on your side or to make excuses for why we should have this land, why we should be supported by the Christians in America, that kind of thing, you know, and I'm not saying that there aren't devout Jews, but certainly I think the people that are political are more apt to kind of use it in that way. And then we may have talked about this on the last one, but even the Orthodox Jews, the Hasidic Jews, the way they see the Torah that they call the Torah, is like multiple books. It's not just the first five books of the Bible, the Talmud and the Mishnah Torah and even the Zohar and the Sefer Yetzirah and all these mystic books. That's the Torah to them. And they say plainly that the Torah can have endless meaning. So I think Pete on my show, Pete Quinones, was saying that they have, you know, it's kind of like, what was the term he used? They don't have any moral absolutes. You know, it can mean anything to whatever any rabbi or anybody else says it can mean, you know, so it's just a strange thing.
Like it's postmodern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah. And you know what I've kind of realized is this, besides political implications, which I think there are a lot of for Christian Zionism, but, the story with Christian Zionism is that Christians need Jews to occupy Israel for the second coming, for Christ's return. Is that kind of correct?
Well, you know, that's a great question.
Because if that's true, that's Talmudic. That's like trying to trick God into the second coming.
Right. Now, So as far as I know, I've never heard that coming from a Christian. I'm sure it has, but that is definitely the idea of the Orthodox and the Talmudic Jews. You know, that there's even talk of getting every Jew over to Israel, which that's never going to happen. It's just not anything that could happen, you know. I even read the other day from another book. I wish I could remember the name of it. I just stumbled across it and I have it on PDF, and it's one of the best things I've ever read about the history of Zionism. But they were talking about how they had some historic quotes in there about how during I'm having a brain fart, early 1900s when America, the economy collapsed. Help me out.
And Great Depression.
Great Depression. I'm sorry.
So, happens to me all the time.
Repression, depression. So when that happened, the Zionists saw that as an opportunity because they felt like if Jews weren't doing well in America, then that was their opportunity to kind of sell Palestine to them, you know. And so they tried to do that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately for them at that time, money did become pretty slim for the Zionist organizations, and they too couldn't, because they came up with their own, I didn't realize this until I read that, they came up with their own Committee on Public Information, which was a propaganda agency, just like Bernays and Lippmann came up with for Wilson under the World War One. So it was dedicated to just persuading Jews in America to go to Palestine and why they should. And that kind of lost funding after a while during the Great Depression, but interesting tidbit there.
Yeah. they're still offering, and I forget the name, they offer descendants.
Yeah, birthright.
Yeah, the birthright.
That is one guy, Deborah. That's a private person that pays really for, that funds all of that. Are you familiar with that, Oddman?
You know, I ran across that a couple of years ago. That's something I need people, to look into.
I know people that have done it.
So do I.
You just, how does it work, Deborah? You just go to the website, can prove that your mom's Jewish, and you get to go to Israel. And and I mean, it's crazy the way that they pitch it to, I know, to young boys, is that you get to hook up with a Israeli girl when you go. That's how they pitch it. And I think that's how, I think it happens. Israeli chicks are hot. It's like, there's no two ways about it, you know, like, so yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I mean that, I mean, it's, I don't blame them if you're trying to promote an Israeli state, like that's the best way to do it is to get people to go there and have babies and stay, you know?
Yeah.
So Leroy, be quiet.
Yeah. Did you guys, and this is old news now, but, I think it was like a year and a half, maybe ago, there was a comedian, Bobby Lee, he's an Asian guy, and he was on this podcast. I forget the name of the podcast.
It was on Bad Friends. His podcast was Santino.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell the story. I know it.
Yeah. And he admits, Deborah, on there, he starts just talking about a random story. And he said, he's telling the co-host that, he got an offer to go to Israel.
Yes, Steve Byrne, another comedian, said, "Do you want to go to Israel with me? They'll pay everything."
That's right. And he's like, I think he kind of says, "Well, why would I want to?" Just because that's probably not something, you know, that a comedian would first think of. But anyway, this other comedian, Steve Byrne, tells him, "Well, they pay your way. They pay everything, your whole entire trip." And he did it because he thought, "Well, that sounds cool, you know." And then he gets there and he realizes as soon as he got off the plane, they tell him, "You got to tweet something positive about Israel every day." So it was, you know, it was all kind of a way to just get advertising. And he talked about how, I mean, a whole group of comedians went over there with him and how that kind of thing happens all the time. So they're very, sneaky. So
they don't really care if you're Jewish, they just want you to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're going to advertise anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure they like,
I think they probably like that you're not Jewish and that you're going over there and they just tell you what to do and you do it. If you're a boy, I think they enjoy that a lot. Yeah.
I would think so. Yeah. Yeah. And it makes me wonder too, you know, since I've seen that, you know, because I see, like the other day, maybe a month ago, I saw a post from, and I don't even follow them, but the band Offspring had posted something about being in Israel, right?
Really?
And I was like, yeah, I bet you got paid to go over there. I mean, maybe not, but.
Yeah, they were probably doing some like real rich kids bar mitzvah or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
They were doing Benjamin Netanyahu's grandson's bar mitzvah.
Oh, you know, a little more trivia on that. You mentioned BB. So his son Yair lives here.
He's in like Miami Beach right now, right? Just chilling.
Exactly. And isn't that funny that, I mean, you know, maybe it was a few months ago that he, you know, I don't know how long he's been in Miami, but pretty convenient seeing how what just happened a few weeks ago. And also, you guys, we may have mentioned this, but forgive me. You know, there's that whole, I think the visa waiver, that whole thing came about right before this, you know, Israel versus Palestine, this new thing.
Remind us what you're talking about.
So as far as I can tell, I haven't read deeply into it, but I think just next month, Israelis will not have to have a visa to come into the United States. And that was passed right before this happened. And I thought, well, that's kind of an odd, because other countries were kind of like, what? Why not us? Why are they getting that privilege? And rightly so. And I thought, man, that's kind of weird that happened right before this whole thing, you know? I don't know. Maybe it's just a coincidence, but it seems strange.
That's crazy. Yeah, but then you, like, think about it, and you're like, well, how much do they actually care about the people that lived there, because they were like along the, they were the worst on the vaccine stuff.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that actually had like the real data that everybody was using first, because their sample set was so large, I think, because everybody had to do it there.
Right. Yep. And they had what, like had to get like four or five.
Yeah, I think it was really, really hard to operate there without it. So.
Yeah. Cause I remember there were big protests. They kind of tried to keep them quiet, but there were big protests over that in Israel. You know, they really do a good job of not, you know, when they have dissent over there, it doesn't get into the mainstream media here. And of course our mainstream media is glad not to report it, but cause I don't think it was even a big deal here about all the protests after the last election. I did see a good piece on the Wall Street Journal, and you know, we talk about how biased media is and how, you know, how it's just basically useless, but I have noticed there is a little bit of a difference in the Wall Street Journal's reporting than any of the others on Israel. That's the only one I've noticed that they will report some negative things. Like they reported that they actually have, it's still up on their website. I think it might be behind a paywall, but they had an article that explained how Israel created Hezbollah and Hamas by arming the Muslim Brotherhood and these different organizations. And I don't think any other, and don't get me wrong, I've seen, you know, things on the Wall Street Journal that I think are just total propaganda, but at least they've got the guts to report some things, I guess. It might just be particular people that work there.
When did Wall Street Journal report on that?
Now that Hamas, the Hezbollah article, that's been several years old. That's what I want to say, like maybe 2018 or something like that.
Had you heard that yet, Deborah?
No, absolutely not.
So the story behind that, correct me, I'll try to tell it in a bro science way to Deborah Oddman, but if I'm wrong or I'm missing anything, feel free to butt in. But Benjamin Netanyahu is on record saying that Israel has endorsed Hamas as being the head of Palestine because it makes it, I guess in a shorter way of saying it, is it makes it easier to oppose them and to be like, well, we can't negotiate with them. They're a terrorist group.
Uh-huh.
And he's also said things like, we control how high the flame goes, which makes the attacks seem very, very interesting.
Yeah, and there, I wish I had it all in front of me. You know, there's so much information, you kind of start to forget stuff and get stuff mixed up. But there's also the fact that they wanted to arm, I think, the Muslim Brotherhood against the PLO.
Yes, they wanted. They did to oppose the PLO. So I missed that part.
So, you know, then, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood morphs into, I think Hamas.
Mm-hmm.
And Hezbollah, I guess, is supposed to be much more powerful than Hamas. And much
Hezbollah is like Hamas, but in Iran,
Lebanon, I think. Okay. I'm going to say Lebanon. I could be wrong about that, but you're right. I do hear Hezbollah and Iran, a lot mentioned the same sentence. So they could be.
Are you, have you ever listened to the Martyr Maid podcast?
You know, I haven't, but I saw Dave Smith had, posted the, I guess they have a documentary maybe.
Oh,
or maybe really? They were
well, it's this guy Daryl Cooper. He's been on Pete's show a couple times. It's really, really good. Check out his show. Like, it's like he started in like 2000s. It's like a hardcore history, but way more awesome. He started in 2016 and he has like 30 episodes out. They're like all like 4 hours long. He has like a Jonestown series that's like 5 episodes, and like some of them are like 6 hours long.
Cool. Yeah, I'll check that out.
I think he has like a 4-part, like when he first started, is on Israeli Palestinian history.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that in like 2016. His one on the Bolshevik Revolution is the best podcast I've ever heard. It's absolutely horrific. You should definitely listen to it. It's called The Anti-Humans. I'll send it to you, man.
Yeah, but, definitely.
But he just came out with like the fifth part in his like he came out with another 4-hour part on the Israeli Palestinian stuff, and he goes into all the stuff from 1947 on this one. It gets really convoluted and it's hard to follow. But yeah, he gets into all the crazy stuff, all the plane hijackings. Deborah, can you remember when like planes were getting hijacked like every week in like the late 60s, early 70s?
No, I wouldn't have been tuned into that.
At some point, odd man, like 82 planes were hijacked by the PLO in 1 year or something like that. Wow. God. Yeah. But yeah, he talks about Ariel Sharon, and I think Ariel Sharon was like the original commander of that terrorist unit that you had mentioned earlier.
Okay.
The one that
Ergun.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, and it's pretty wild. So I recommend that to everybody. So
yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah. But we've had you for an hour, 15 minutes. I think that's a good place to stop. What's your predictions? Like, what's the way out? Is there any hope that there's so much political pressure against our support for Israel that we just F off and be like, do it yourself? And they they have to concede because they're little tiny countries, like right in the middle of a beehive.
You know, it's a great question. I mean, you know, some people, I'm seeing people like, you know, Scott Ritter and people like that make predictions that it's either going to go one of two ways. You know, they're going to get to the point where enough countries are going to say, you've got to stop. You're killing all these people that had nothing to do with, you know, the attacks in your country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to stop.
Yeah, I mean, that's the common sense way to look at it. And then, but it's also crazy that the support and all these like socialist groups are supporting the other side now, that's gonna cause people to just go the other way as well, because they don't want to be associated with those groups that were so bad, you know, here in the summer of 2020.
Yeah, and it works in favor of the elites, because like, you know, I said earlier, because of the division and the chaos.
I'm anti-Israel, but I'm not pro like socialist Islam, you know? Like
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to say. I mean, you know, I don't know what exactly the answer is. I mean, if we had some common sense leaders who would just not toe the party lines and say, look, our foreign policy is crazy. The communists, you know, the socialists and communists are crazy. We can't keep supporting Israel because we're 30 now, I think almost 34 trillion in debt. You know, we've got to be more non-interventionist and start worrying about our own country. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's anybody out. I mean, if Trump gets in there, he's one of the biggest Zionists there is. So I can't see, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's going to save the day. But, you know, he said today, I think yesterday he was at the Jewish Republican Committee or whatever it's called. And he just was saying the same thing that pretty much Biden's saying, you know, that, you know, the other side are savages and we have to defeat them no matter what.
Yeah. Barbarians is what they're.
Barbarians. Yeah. That's so true. It's like,
yeah, it's like, it was so funny that he was called like anti-Semitic when he was in office.
Right.
But
so silly.
Benjamin Netanyahu slept in the spare bedroom at Jared Kushner's childhood home. You know,
it's so crazy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen people get, I mean, who could be more pro-Israel than him? I don't think there's anybody.
Maybe Ron DeSantis. Maybe Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen people on Twitter call Ron DeSantis anti-Semitic. And I'm like, are you insane? I mean, I've been – go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask, is it too simplistic to just say that the U.S. is in support of Israel because it gives us a foot in that area.
Like that it's our aircraft carrier. I've heard it described as that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be, you know, like, you know, you've probably seen that video of Biden when he was a senator saying that if there wasn't an Israel, America would have to invent an Israel because of our, you know, our, what does he say, basically business dealings. That's kind of what he's saying overseas in that area. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know where it's going to end up. I just, I hope they don't drive us into World War III. That's my biggest fear. It's just, and you know, Israel's got nukes and that does scare me because you do have those fundamentalist people in the government there now. And a lot of these people are, it seem to be trying to carry out the, you know, the, equate the, well, the Palestinians and the Arabs with Amalek, which they see say, you know, has to be blotted off the face of the earth or their memory's got to be blotted out forever. But then also, I think may have mentioned this before, but the Esau Edom is the West in Christianity, which is a descendant of Amalek. And some of the rabbis say that Esau and Edom, well, actually a lot of them say that, has to fall so, you know, the Messiah can come back over in Israel and all that. So it almost seems like they're trying to push that. And then I'll end with this. There's also the idea, you know, that they're trying to push immigration with these policies towards the Palestinians into the Western, the U.S. and the U.K. and different places like that. And I've even got a clip of the head rabbi in Jerusalem. His name's David Barhaim. And he says in the clip, he says something like, it needs to be admitted that there are Jews behind these entities and NGOs who are pushing this mass immigration policy. And it's a short clip, so I don't know if he was promoting it or saying that it shouldn't happen. I don't know, but I presume he was promoting it because I've seen other rabbis laughing.
Like saying that open borders are good. I mean, open borders is from them.
Yeah, because I mean, our foreign policy seems to basically be their foreign policy, and it's created mass immigration and refugees since the war on terror. And a lot of people can't understand that our policies are doing or undoing us, you know, if you will. It's our fault in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I think we're on the brink of a radical Islam false flag stateside. I think it's coming. I hate to see the fact that I hate to see it. The good thing for guys like you and I, Odd Man, is that white nationalist terrorism is no longer the greatest threat in America. You know,
right?
We're kind of off the hook again. So,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have our time again, but
I mean, for now, anti-Semitism's cool. Let's enjoy it as much as we can. You know.
We've got to capitalize on this.
My wife is Jewish, so I feel pretty anti-Semitic at least once a week, you know. So, Deborah, I'm very happy that you can laugh at these jokes. I love you very much.
I love you too.
Thanks for being a good sport, letting Odd Man and I vent and just be here. I hope you're getting it some.
I'm trying to absorb. It's all good information, and I'm so under. Yeah, it's all good.
If you ever want any book recommendations, or I can send you the links to these books.
Yeah,
you can find most of these online.
As soon as we're done, and I'll put them in the show notes.
Yeah, okay. I wrote down most of them, three of them.
Cool, cool.
Have you ever heard of this guy, Norman Finkelstein?
Oh, man, that's funny. I was gonna bring up that book, his The Holocaust Industry book. He writes a lot of books, but
I want to read that one. Deborah's daughter, who's on TikTok, she just showed me one that she's gotten, and that's so his stuff's being pushed through the TikTok crowd.
Now he is a raging socialist or social democrat.
Yeah.
But he's excellent on that one subject. And he's, you know, with that book, that might have been his first book. He exposed how all these organizations were making a killing off the Holocaust, but
does
weren't
he
even
say,
giving
does he
the.
say the six is wrong? The six number?
No.
He's not revisionist.
No.
Okay.
No.
Got it.
But yeah, he's talking, and that's his main thing is, you know, how they've made a fortune off the Holocaust and how the people that were supposed to get a lot of the money from these organizations, the Holocaust survivors, didn't get the money and how it's all a racket. I mean, he's been excoriated, as you can imagine. And he's done a lot of books now about Palestine and that whole situation. But he's, you know, I don't agree with his politics for the most part, but he's a very smart guy. And I've seen him debate Wolf Blitzer.
Really?
And Wolf Blitzer is a hardcore Zionist. So,
yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Yeah. That's why he's being pushed to that side on TikTok. I think it's because he's like a, what is he, like a Bernie Sanders type socialist dude?
That's what I assume. Just from a few of the interviews, he said little things here and there. Because mostly interviews I've watched, it's been all about Palestine and Israel. But, yeah, I can tell he's probably very liberal.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's funny. Those guys never went and lived on kibbutzes. Bernie Sanders got kicked out of. Bernie Sanders went to a hippie commune in the early 70s and got kicked out because he wouldn't work. He got kicked out of a hippie commune because he was too lazy.
You know, that's funny. I saw a funny clip with Bernie just earlier, right before we started the show. And he's leading some kind of council or something. They're having a hearing, you know, I guess in the Senate. Is he a senator? That's right. Or is it congressman? Yeah. Senator. So I guess it's these senators, and he's the head of it. So he's right in the middle. And then on the other side is another panel. And two of these guys start going back and forth. And then one of them's like, "You want to go?" And he's like, "Let's go." And they both stand up. They're about to fight. And Bernie's like, "Sit down. The American people already think we're fools." You know?
Yeah. I think we have the exact same Twitter algorithm on, man. That was like some congressman or senator from Iowa. And the other guy is the head of the Teamsters Union.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was funny. But Oddman, this was totally awesome. Thank you so much for giving us all your knowledge and giving us your time. I know it's late where you're at. So tell everybody how to support and find you and stuff.
Yeah, so you can find me at _TheOddManOut on Twitter and Instagram. And just look in the profile. There's a link tree, and you can go to my Patreon on there, and which is /TheOddManOut, and find the show. It's on Podbean, The Oddcast featuring The Odd Man Out. And I'll break the news on here. I think I'm going to change the name of the show soon, just because it's such a hard title to find.
That,
I made it so long.
The featuring part.
Yeah. It made it really hard to find. So I'm looking at maybe Burn After Listening might be the new show name. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. And everybody check out his two most recent shows with one of our favorites, Pete Quinones. And what are you up to on Those We Don't Speak of? 11?
I think 12, if I'm not mistaken. And I am finishing up another one, which is going to be covering Israel Shahak. He was a great Jewish author on this whole subject. And I'm just basically going over his book, Jewish History, Jewish Religion. And I'm going by chapter. I'll probably just do a series on the whole book and not read it word for word, but the best parts of it, because it's so important. He seemed to understand things like nobody else, because he was a Holocaust survivor, but he was also a Hebrew University professor, and he realized this, Zionism and what it was really all about. So it's really interesting, because he knows the religion side of it better than anybody else I've looked into.
What's the name of that book?
It's called Jewish History, Jewish Religion by Israel Shahak. And you can actually find that book. The PDF version is on archive.org. There's, I think all these books pretty much are on archive.org. So it's a great source to check out.
Yeah, I got to get into that more instead of buying all these books. I like buying books, but yeah. Yeah, I still want to get into You Gentiles and read it on the show. So maybe I'll have you on to do a chapter with me.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great, man.
Cool. Well, once again, thank you so much for being here. Deborah, thank you for being a good sport. We really appreciate it. And yeah, what do we say? Their order is not our order.
That's right.
All right.
That's thanks, right. Guys.
See you soon.
Thank all you. Right.
Thanks, Odd Man.
Thank you.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.